If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56steve.com. Lower.com, equal housing lender, MLS 112-4061.
Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Meow. Yes, it's coming up. It's the Big Cat Show, the Lincoln State Cat Club Cat Show. Jeremy Bastarash is the show manager. Is that the right title there, Jeremy?
That is what I am. I'm the show manager for the show.
Okay, so let's start here. I said cat show, and there are probably most of you who have never even been to a cat show. Some of you have never even heard of a cat show. You've seen dog shows because they're on television all the time. On Thanksgiving Day, there's the National Dog Show presented by Purina every year. That's on NBC. The ratings, by the way, for that are through the roof, Jeremy. I mean, if you only had that for a cat show, can you imagine ratings for a cat show on TV being better than, say, the World Series game, being right up there with the Super Bowl? That's how popular that dog show is. So how do we have that happen for a cat show?
Well, it's a matter of recognition, right? Most people don't know cat shows exist. They don't know what's involved with a cat show. It's a different breed of show,
so to speak. Let's talk about, well, obviously they do exist, and there's the International Cat Association, there's the Cat Fanciers Association. Those are the two primary registries. Cat shows happen all over the world, and as I understand it, at this point in time, there are places in the Far East where the cat show idea, cat shows, are actually more popular than they are in the U.S. Am I right about that?
Oh, the cat shows occurring in Southeast Asia are simply massive, particularly in China. Cat shows are just massive events with thousands and thousands of attendees every day.
So how are they different in China than they are in the U.S.? Are we doing something wrong?
Oh, gosh. I'd love to get into that, but I'll be honest, I'm not sure.
It's just the extreme popularity that they've kind of taken off there, and the cat shows, as I understand, are somewhat similar. But we haven't described. Okay, so you walk into the door. The cat show, by the way, the Lincoln State Cat Club cat show has moved back to its old digs. Where are you this year?
Yeah, so we have moved back to the Kane County Fairgrounds in St. Charles, Illinois. We did a 2 years away from there, and now we're coming back to Kane County Fairgrounds.
All right, so you walk in.
Beautiful facility, great parking.
Yeah, I remember that. So, and hey, I'm a Chicagoan. You say parking, I'm there no matter what it is. You say parking, and it's free, right, the parking?
Yes. Yeah.
So you say
you're free parking, and it's a massive lot.
Yeah, you say free parking to me. I'll travel 500 miles to get free parking. So there you are. You walk indoors. Obviously, this is an indoor event. You walk indoors. What do you see? What happens at the cat show?
So at the cat show, we have a large portion of the floor is set aside for the exhibitors. These are the folks that are actually bringing their purebred cats and household pets to the cat show to be judged by each of eight judges, four judges each day. And then those judges are going to cycle through and view every cat in that cat show hall by group, from kittens to adults to altered purebred cats, and finally to the household pet category, which is really a free-for-all. Anything goes.
And the cool thing about a cat show, first of all, you're going to see cat breeds you never knew existed before. Everything from the Abyssinian, well, you might have heard of the Abyssinian, to the Bombay cat, to the Chartreux cat, to Devon Rex cats. And down the line, you see all these cats that are the same in that they're cats, but they're different from one another. And not only do they look different, Jeremy, their personalities are different as well.
Vastly different personalities. There are some cats that are highly athletic and highly intelligent, and then there are other cats that are very pretty.
The Persian! Persian!
Right, right, yeah, and the British, and, you know, they're, maybe there's not a whole lot going on upstairs for the majority of them, but but they're wonderful loves, and they're super affectionate, and they're groomed to perfection.
And the question I get asked all the time is, okay, a dog show, the dogs walk around, and they show themselves off. We've all seen dog shows, what happens. How can cats be, I mean, my cat, I can't even get to the carrier. That's what I hear. It's not true with my cat, but my cat even get to the carrier, let alone appear in front of hundreds of people at a cat show. Explain how these cats, if they didn't want to be there, they wouldn't be there. I mean, if they don't show well, they're not coming to the next show because there's no point to it. So the cats have more of a say in what happens here, I'd argue, than dogs do.
Oh, without a doubt. You know, as we know, most cats are not particularly obedient creatures. It's more of a partnership. And the owner of the cat is going to bring that cat up from their benching area where they have a vinyl and fabric tent that kind of has their maybe their home blankets and their food and water dishes there. The owner is there with them, so they feel a little more comfortable. When it comes time and they get called up, that owner is going to do a last-minute check on grooming and eyes and ears, and they're going to bring the cat out, and they're going to hand-carry that cat from the benching area up to the judging ring that has called them up to their ring. At that point, the owner places them into a cage, and when the judge is ready, they will turn around, bring that cat out of the cage, and then they'll place it on the judging table where the judge is going to go over the cat from head to tail to foot and look at every aspect of how that cat is structurally built and how it's groomed and, you know, the attitude and the demeanor of the cat is a big part of it. They have to want to be handled.
Does each individual breed have a breed standard that the judge is looking at? And are they also considering talent, you know, cats riding bicycles or something? I don't know.
That'd be a trip, right? there's not a talent contest. There is a thing called an agility course. We don't have one of those at the Lincoln State Cat Show this year. So at our show, we will be having each cat being compared to a standard for that breed.
And Jeremy, we'll talk more about this. And I want to talk about what you mean by standards. I want to talk about some cat breeds people may never have heard of that you'll see at this cat show. But there's more that's happening at the Lincoln State Cat Club cat show as well. And we'll talk about more when we come back on WGN. Jeremy Bastarash is the show manager for the Lincoln State Cat Club Cat Show, which is coming up. What's the date of the cat show?
So we're having the cat show on February 22nd and 23rd. It's open to the public from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on both days.
And it's
that is Saturday and Sunday.
At the Kane County Fairgrounds, right?
That is correct, at 525 South Randall Road in St. Charles, Illinois.
Yeah, beautiful St. Charles. All right, so we're at the cat show. We're judging these different cats. You said they're looking at the judges are looking at the breed standards for each individual breed. The thing that does not happen at dog shows that I love about cat shows is that the judge says, this is why. The judge describes why the judge is making the choices that he or she is making about that cat. So at a dog show, the judge just looks at that dog and, shakes his head or looks really disappointed in that dog or whatever, touches the dog here and there and there, and then it's the next dog. At a cat show, there's conversation with the crowd, explaining what's happening and why that decision is being made. And I love that, Jeremy.
No, it's wonderful, particularly when you're seeing a breed that you're completely unfamiliar with. And that cat is brought up to the judging table, and the judge starts talking about that cat and talks about the features of that cat that make it unique. These are items that are pulled directly from the breed standard for that particular breed. Each cat is going to be compared to their own standard and going to give basically a point scale. Maybe they're 98% of perfection versus 96% of perfection. And that's how a judge is able to compare one cat breed to a completely different cat breed and say, this is the better cat.
Yeah, that's interesting when that happens. You know, before people, and I want to talk about different cat breeds, some cat breeds, we won't get to talk about all of them. What are there, like 50 cat breeds that'll be at the cat show, something like that? But
yeah, more than one, less than 100.
Yeah, somewhere in there. It is literally about 50 probably, so in there somewhere. So before we talk about some of those breeds, I want to make it clear that I believe that you are also open to domestic short hair, domestic long hair cats, the kind of cat you get in an animal shelter that is anything but a purebred cat. And we are not absolutely, at least I'm not, and I'm sure you agree, saying don't adopt at a shelter. We're just saying, okay, if your choice, and it's America, people can make choices, is to get a pedigree or purebred cat, that's fine. But you also celebrate those shelter cats that I talk about, right?
We do, and we actually have shelters come to our show and get the exposure from the cat show to make the public aware, hey, these shelters, these second chance shelters exist. They're here. They have cats available for adoption generally at every show that we hold, and people can find out information how they can help those shelters. And without a cat show, a purebred cat show like we're holding that bring public in to see these unique creatures, you know, maybe these shelters wouldn't ever get the time of day with the general public. So it's a huge opportunity for them, and it's a way that we get to give back.
All true. And right now, at least in Chicago, there are too many dogs, if you will, as well as cats, that are looking for homes. Too many, meaning the shelters are at their peak in a lot of individual cases. All right, so I want to talk about some of the breeds. You wouldn't be here if you yourself were not a breeder. What breed do you breed?
Yeah, so we currently breed the Cornish Rex. This is a breed that that hails from Cornwall, England. Started out as just a barn cat, and one of the barn cats developed a curly coat, and they basically backbred that cat and added a bunch of other genetics to it, and now we have this very slender breed, very athletic, far too intelligent for its own good, and sweet as pie.
Yeah, active and affectionate at the same time, I believe, sometimes called the greyhounds of the cat world, but their coat is more like a poodle in some ways. Give me another breed that'll breed there that you can talk about.
Yeah, so I of course I don't know all of the breeds that will be there, but I have good information on who might be there. So one of the other ones that you'll see is a breed we've talked about before, and that's the Lycoi. This is the werewolf cat.
Uh-oh.
This is a natural mutation that occurs in the feral cat population. So while we say it's a purebred cat, really it's a unique genetic trait for this particular breed.
And they kind of look like werewolves. It's hard to describe on the radio, but we'll try. I mean, picture in your mind a werewolf. Now picture a cat. Superimpose them on one another, and you have the Lycoi cat. And they are, in some ways, like the Cornish Rex, in that they are too intelligent for their own good. They are both, at the same time, active and affectionate. But there are likely about 50 other breeds we could talk about that we just don't have time to do. One other thing about the cat show is if you're looking for a unique toy that you can't even find, you say Amazon has everything. They don't. I've seen so many cat products, moreover, more than just cat toys, at cat shows, including your cat show. So you have lots and lots of products, correct, that are out there that people otherwise wouldn't see.
We have some wonderful vendors that provide a whole concatenary of products for people to look at. You know, something that's missing from online shopping, that being of a slightly older generation, going out and actually touching and feeling a product before you buy it, you have that opportunity at the cat show. You get to see these. Many of them are handmade by the artisans there at the show, and it's everything from cat toys to blankets to pillows to cat themed human products. To set blockers that work amazingly, and people can show you how that works, and you can smell it yourself. It's wonderful products that you're not going to find at your local pet store. It really only comes together when these small artisans are able to come to a show like ours and exhibit their wares.
We only have about a minute left, but you also have an educational ring. I will be speaking there on Saturday of the cat show. I'll be doing two different talks. And you have expert veterinarians, of course, all veterinarians are experts at what they do, and other speakers as well. And you can learn more about the Lincoln State Cat Club Cat Show. Where can people go to learn more, Jeremy?
So the best place to find us is go to our Facebook page. It's Lincoln State Cat Club. And then in parentheses, it says 501c7, but that's how you know it's ours. If you just do Lincoln State Cat Club on Facebook, you'll come right up to our page, and it'll have all the information about our show, how to buy tickets in advance of the show, and, of course, we take money at the door as well.
And how much are those tickets?
So tickets are $15 for adults. Kids 6 to 11 are $10. 5 and under are free. Seniors are $10, and we have a special family pack of four, so two adults, two children, $40, and of course, free parking.
Free
in Chicago.
Yeah, it's a very family friendly event as well, and not an expensive one, as you point out. Give us the dates and location one more time.
So it's February 22nd and 23rd, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., both days, Saturday and Sunday, at the Kane County Fairgrounds in St. Charles, Illinois. Bring a can of cat food. If you have a kid, have them come to the stuffy contest. They'll get their stuffies judged by an official CFA person, and maybe go home with a little something.
Go home with a little something. Thank you very much, Jeremy. Per capita of every major city in America, Chicago has more coyotes than any other major city. Oh, Las Vegas, Los Angeles, New York City, Phoenix, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle, Washington, D.C., they're all up there in the running, but it's Chicago that's number one with urban coyotes. We've seen examples. A plane actually hit, an airplane hit a coyote and had to abort a takeoff recently, and we heard probably about the coyote in the Aldi story. You've seen that video. You know, the thing is that coyotes do so much benefit for Chicago. They eat rats that spread disease, including leptospirosis. Coyotes don't want to interact with people. If you see a coyote, don't panic. Do keep small and mid-sized dogs on leashes. And if there are coyotes around, don't let your dog out in the yard unsupervised. And cats, they should be indoors. This could be my favorite conversation of the year. And we're only at the beginning of the year, but I know that's because I have been passionate about this topic for a very long time. Dr. Josh Stern is both professor and associate dean of research at North Carolina State University College of Veterinary Medicine. And boy, oh boy, Dr. Stern, you can give me the exact data, but I will say this, too many, way too many cats, more than most people would think, die as a result of heart disease, a kind of heart disease called feline hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, often before their 10th birthday. And now this can all change. And thank you for the work you've done on this, because you're part of the explanation for all of this. So I start by saying thank you. And I think we begin with, all right, how many cats actually do die currently? It's going to change, but currently as a result of this kind of heart disease.
Yeah, thanks for the warm welcome, Steve.
So hypertrophic cardiomyopathy afflicts a lot of different species, but cats actually are the most affected species that we know about to date. About 1 in 7 cats will come down with the condition of hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. And of those cats, about half of them that get diagnosed will experience a bad disease outcome and ultimately go on to succumb to the disease process. So it's a really huge problem in cats. It's one of the most important diseases that we face in the feline medicine population.
So years ago, and you know this story, and a lot of listeners do too, I had a cat named Ricky. And Ricky was a well-known cat because, as it happened, who doesn't train their cat to play the piano? I did that. And that was a long time ago. Now you go on YouTube and you see all these cats doing all these great things, and I loved it. Karen Pryor recently passed away. I don't know if you know Karen's name. She really created clicker training greatly and was responsible for saying, okay, you can't put a leash and harness around a dolphin, so why not use a whistle? And then several years later thought, okay, let's do this with dogs. We don't need to do anything except to use a clicker, some sort of marker that is novel that they can recognize. And I thought, okay, if people can do that with dogs, and they use this with zoos all over the world now. Trainers for television and the movies use this form of training. But at that time, no one really thought about it for cats, and I trained Ricky to do all these things, including playing the piano, and he was so well socialized that we'd go out to Petco and PetSmart and do recitals for the public. We'd raise money for animal shelters. And television found out about it. After all, I'm on television. That was easy enough to happen. And suddenly, Ricky became this really international celebrity of sorts, was at some point in time along the way diagnosed with the kind of heart disease we're talking about. And I created a fund with the Win Feline Foundation, a not-for-profit that supports studies for cat health, now called the Every Cat Health Foundation, and we raised a fair amount of money over the years. Lots of studies have been done, and my hope has always been that we can find a solution because this impacts so many cats, as you found out, you know, as you've determined with your research and relayed back to us exactly how many cats. This is incredibly common. Now, when cats are diagnosed with HCM or hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, how are they typically diagnosed, Dr. Stern?
Yeah, the diagnosis of HCM, as we call it, is kind of challenging. And so many cats will be diagnosed really late in the disease state when they've already developed signs of things like congestive heart failure and having trouble breathing, or when they're already having significant arrhythmias, or unfortunately when they've thrown a blood clot, which can be formed secondary to this disease process. So too many cats are diagnosed late with this disease. If you want to diagnose the disease before any of those symptoms occur, it relies on cardiac ultrasound, or what's known as echocardiography, and that's a pretty advanced test that's largely limited to use by veterinary cardiologists. So the diagnosis of this disease is not easy early in the disease process and is really one of an imaging diagnosis, which is not something that in the past we've been accustomed to just doing for every cat.
Well, what's more, there's an affordability issue to some extent because those ultrasounds can cost, you know, upwards of $1,000, near that or just over that, depending on where you live in the country. What's more, I suggest that there's one other missing point that you didn't make here, and that's a significant number, you know that number better than I, of cats just suddenly die. And there's nothing, I mean, no one even knew that cat was sick, including the good news, that cat, but suddenly dies. It is the number one cause of sudden death in cats that happens, again, more frequently, even than we likely know, I think, Dr. Stern, because what if it's an indoor-outdoor cat, doesn't come back one day? People think, oh, someone else took the cat in, or the cat got hit by the car. Maybe, but it could have also been HCM.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the outcomes of HCM is certainly sudden death. And so we absolutely know about that. And, you know, obviously when that happens, it's too late for us to have done anything in retrospect.
Yeah. So currently, today, we'll talk about what's going to happen, but today, one frustration for cardiologists, veterinary cardiologists such as yourself, is there has been no magic bullet treatment, has there?
That's correct. Yeah, there's really nothing currently on the market to address the underlying process that's happening within the heart muscle itself for cats with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. Veterinarians are left to treat symptoms when they arise or to try and use medications to prevent symptoms without really any data to show that it does that.
And what it can do, I suspect, and in many cases I suspect isn't quite the right terminology, I know can support quality of life, which is a good thing, but it really doesn't impact the progression of the disease very much, as I understand it, if at all, Dr. Stern.
That's correct, yeah, absolutely.
So when we come back, there is going to be, remember, this impacts a lot of cats. It may impact the cat you're about to adopt or the cat you have just adopted. It occurs in purebred cats, some breeds more than others, but the thing is, it occurs in all cats. And we'll talk about which cats it's most likely to occur in when we come back, and most importantly, a special announcement about what may happen this year to help all cats with this disease, feline hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. It sounds bad, doesn't it? It is, but that's going to change. Dr. Josh Stern is a professor and associate dean of research at North Carolina State University College of Veterinary Medicine. It's ironic. I mean, we're talking about heart disease in cats. And the current dean, relatively new, of your school happens to be one of the researchers that we can thank, I think, for what we know today about this disease in cats, Dr. Stern.
Yeah, that's really true. Our dean, Dr. Kate Muirs, is one of the cardiologists and geneticists founding with describing at least a few different mutations now that are known to cause hypertrophic cardiomyopathy in some cat breeds. So Dean Muirs has been very invested in the topic of cardiomyopathies and feline hypertrophic cardiomyopathy in particular for many, many years. And we certainly have her to thank for that.
Yeah, indeed that is true. So which cats are more likely to have this happen?
That's a great question. And I think, you know, it's a really hard thing to answer. With 1 in 7 cats being afflicted by this disease, you could pretty much point at any cat and say that they have a really high risk for developing this condition. What we do know is that there are some breeds of cat that have known genetic mutations that contribute to the development of the disease. So Maine Coon cats, Ragdoll cats, Sphinx cats certainly have a higher incidence of this disease, and the genetics of the disease in those populations have been fairly well described. But overall, regardless of whether you're one of those purebreds, if you're a cat, the odds are 1 in 7. And so pretty much every cat you see is at risk.
Yeah. Currently, up till now, do we have any idea? Okay, it's diagnosed in a cat, individual cat. Then
yes.
How many years does that cat have? Do we know the answer to that?
We do not know the answer to that question. So one of the things that we're fairly notoriously bad about in the treatment of HCM is understanding which cats are going to move forward to have a bad disease outcome, like congestive heart failure, and which cats are going to remain asymptomatic or subclinical with no disease symptoms for quite some time. We have some advanced cardiac ultrasound techniques that we employ to help us predict that, and there are a few things that have been described. But there really isn't a magic test that can be run in your family vet office that tells us the information here. And so all of those, you know, 1 in 7 cats would be cats that are at risk in their prognosis.
Now, you recently, and by the way, congratulations for this, received an award from the American Veterinary Medical Association for the work that you've done to help further the knowledge that we have today about heart disease in cats. And moreover, about something that the Food and Drug Administration's Center for Veterinary Medicine, I believe, will approve at some point in time in 2025? I know you can't tell us everything about it, but can you talk about what you can tell us?
Absolutely. Thanks, Steve. You know, my lab has been really invested in working towards understanding hypertrophic cardiomyopathy for some time, and one of our key issues is driving towards novel drug therapies that can help reverse the disease or slow down the progression of this disease in its tracks. And we're really fortunate to have the opportunity to work on one such compound, a compound that is known as delayed-release rapamycin. And our work in that area actually did get us the successful acknowledgement of the FDA to move on to what's known as a pivotal clinical trial. So if we were to compare this to human clinical trials, we kind of did the initial steps, we showed a positive outcome, and the FDA Center for Veterinary Medicine came back and said, that looks good. Move forward for a pivotal clinical trial in your quest to have this drug labeled for use in hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. And that all went really, really well. You're correct. We're on a pathway for hopeful approval for that compound so that veterinarians across the globe, at least in the United States, as a first pass, will be able to prescribe this drug for cats with subclinical hypertrophic cardiomyopathy.
And this is the idea is to get the cats before they go into heart failure. And if that happens, these cats are going to be, can I use the C word and say cured?
That is the dream here, right? So the data that we have shows that cats that go on this medication at a specific dose either have halt of the progression of disease or regression of the thickness of their left ventricle, which is kind of the key disease feature. So we are certainly looking to intervene early before they ever get close to having a disease outcome with this therapy, and that's really what our original work and now our pivotal clinical trial that's enrolling hundreds of cats across dozens and dozens of centers in the United States is aiming to do. And so we're very, very excited about that opportunity. And I hope to be able to tell you lots more about how veterinarians go about getting access to this compound in the future. For right now, it remains a multi-center pivotal clinical trial that we're very excited to have under enrollment.
But meanwhile, it's called Focusing on Future Therapies for Feline Heart Disease and Beyond. It'll be a symposium April 26th and 27th at your home, North Carolina State University College of Veterinary Medicine. You can attend. You don't have to be a veterinary professional. You can be a veterinary professional. You can attend in person. Are you in Raleigh or Durham? I don't know. Or you can do it online, and it's something that, by the way, if you're a veterinary professional, you can get continuing education credit for. And you are presenting, you are leading this event, for which I'm grateful, partnering with the Every Cat Health Foundation, and the information can be found at everycat.org or felinesymposium.squarespace.com. Am I right about that website?
Yep, that's it.
And am I right about describing what this event that you will present, but experts from all over the country about this topic, heart disease and cats, will also speak about everything from nutrition to the genetics of this to other treatments and on and on. Can you go further than that, Dr. Stern?
That's right. This symposium really brings together world's experts in feline hypertrophic cardiomyopathy to present the latest breaking information that we have. And so I'm really excited to welcome some incredible speakers here to NC State campus and to talk cats for a solid 2 days. We're really hoping to have some big breakthrough announcements to showcase at that symposium as well.
Well, I think you will. I can't talk more about that yet, but I think you will, which is wonderful. I cannot thank you enough for the work you've done. You know, cat health and dog health mean a lot to me, but this one particular disease means even more. And I am so forever grateful to you and your colleagues who now have put us at a place where we might find, I'll use the word, I'll use the cure word if we can get to it earlier. How do we do that? That'll be discussed at this symposium as well. Once again, that website is felinesymposium.squarespace.com. Dr. Stern, thank you so much, and thank you for the amazing work that you do. Everycat.org is another website where you can sign up, and you could, again, you can attend in person or virtually. Dr. Stern, thank you so much. We don't have anything like it in the Chicago area, but we will soon. It'll be called the Forever Home Dog Sanctuary. This is for dogs that cannot be or are not adopted out from an animal shelter for whatever the reason, a variety of different reasons, sometimes just space. Well, they are raising money to build this sanctuary. They have the land. They need to build it. We've talked about it on the radio. Forever Home Dog Sanctuary Bark and Brews. That's an event February 19th in Highland Park at Norton's Restaurant at 6 o'clock. And I'll be speaking there about a new way to think about dog bites and why we need Forever Home Dog Sanctuary. ForeverHomeDogSanctuary.org to learn more about it. And I'm excited to be there. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN.